Our next case this morning is 2016-858, Disciplinary Counsel versus Ronnie Michael Tamburino. Mr. Bry.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court. My client, Ron Tamburino, is a candidate for the 11th District Court of Appeals this year and was also a candidate for the 11th District Court of Appeals in 2014. And this case is about two statements that he made in two separate ads that the Board of Conduct found to be false and recommended a sanction that is unprecedented. We believe and submit that although this court, I think, was fairly clear in the O'Toole case about what the new standards of evaluating judicial statements are, in other words, they have to be a false statement of fact made knowingly or with reckless disregard of its truth or falsity, which is the New York Times Sullivan standard for public.
What was truthful definition about his statement about Judge Cannon?
Well, there are two statements. The first statement, count one, is the statement that in the State v. Andrews case, that Judge Cannon doesn't think teenage drinking is serious, and that the whole advertisement is about his decision in the State v. Andrews case. And the State v. Andrews case was a Fourth Amendment case in which he held that exigent circumstances did not justify a warrantless entry and arrest of a woman who was hosting a teenage drinking party. Some courts have held that any jailable offense is sufficiently serious, exigent circumstances. The 11th District Court of Appeals and Judge Cannon held that this misdemeanor was not a serious misdemeanor, and therefore there were not exigent circumstances.
That's counsel, if I may, I'm over here, I'm on the right.
Sorry.
I'm looking at the board's finding, but I think I haven't heard the answer yet. Where is there in the record that I can look and find the fact that Judge Cannon felt teenage drinking wasn't a serious crime? Where can I find that?
Well, there are two places, paragraphs 43 and paragraphs 44 of the decision. Paragraph 43 of the decision, his concurring decision, says that there were no exigent circumstances and goes through.
Well, by that, it's a legal standard. In other words, is there time to go get a warrant, which under the eyewitness of the police officer would have been very easy to attain, and then go back to the home? That's the legal standard. You disagree with that?
No, I agree that he made a legal decision. My client believed his decision was erroneous. I do disagree.
Wait a minute. Your client is disagreeing with the majority of the 11th District.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So why did he just single out Judge Cannon? Why didn't he blast the other judges who agreed with that?
Judge Cannon was his opponent in the election.
It's purely motivated by the politics of the election.
Oh, certainly. This is a political ad. He was highlighting questions about the judgment of Judge Cannon. He obviously had no incentive to talk about judgment of people he wasn't running against.
Well, I'm still looking for an answer to my question. Are you saying that because a judge is your political opponent, you can publish a lie about that judge? Is that what you're saying this morning?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you have to judge.
Are you therefore saying this morning that Judge Cannon doesn't think teenage drinking is serious? Is that what you're saying? Are you adopting that?
I am adopting that as not a false statement for two reasons.
It's not a false statement.
It is not a false statement. One, it is not a false statement because it is a true statement that he said in paragraph 44 of the decision that this offense of teenage drinking was not a serious misdemeanor offense. Those are Judge Cannon's words, and so as a legal principle, we believe that it is a legal statement here, but let's assume that we said his personal feelings are that teenage drinking is not serious. Now, I would respectfully submit that in the context of a political ad, that's not what we said, but that would be an opinion. Suppose, for example, someone said Hillary Clinton doesn't feel domestic terrorism is serious.
Hillary Clinton isn't a judge and is not bound by the code of professional conduct. So let's contain our examples, if you have any, to this.
Your Honor, with respect, I don't believe that there is any right to differentiate the freedom of speech in political context between judges and non-judicial. And that was stated in the Suster case, that was stated in Minnesota v. White, and although after the 2014 election, Williams-Hewley was talking about asking people for money. It wasn't talking about...
They were still talking about the distinction between a politician and a candidate for the judiciary. And there is a distinction, according to Chief Justice Roberts.
Your Honor, Chief Justice Roberts did not state, and no decision of the United States Supreme Court has ever stated, that with respect to core speech, the right to communicate ideas to the public, that there is a distinction between the freedom of speech rights of a judicial candidate and a non-judicial candidate. They have said, and even the Republican Party of Minnesota versus White has said, you don't have to treat judicial candidates identical with non-judicial candidates for all purposes. And Williams-Hewley was talking about, you know, asking for money. You may require them to go to certain seminars and so forth. But the core speech and free speech does look at core issues in different ways. The core speech of communicating with the voting public who decides whether or not to elect this person, the rights and privileges of a judicial candidate are no different than the rights and privileges of a non-judicial candidate who is asking the public for their judgment. So I agree with you that the Board of Conduct did in fact stray from that. They basically said, we're not going to follow the New York Times Sullivan standard as it applies to public figure defamation, which is shorthand.
I'm having trouble here, though, sir, because we're here at the Supreme Court of Ohio.
Yes,
and we're
sir.
Talking about judicial conduct. We're not talking about someone running for city council, correct?
That's true, but it's a distinction.
So are you not going to adopt my proposal, then, that if a judicial candidate says something about a judge, they better be darn sure that it's accurate?
Your Honor, there are two ways to take accuracy. One is, could it be misunderstood? And the other is there only one way to interpret it, and it's a false way? If you're saying that you shouldn't, whether you're judicial or non-judicial, whether you're running for city council or running for judge, you have no constitutional right to knowingly make a statement that can only be interpreted in a false sense. But if you're saying that you don't have a right to make statements that might be taken in different ways, that was the resolution this court had in the O'Toole case. It revised Rule 4.3 when it took out the misleading language. So the analysis that the board made of saying, well, it could be taken this way, and we think this is the best way to take it, therefore we're going to say it's a false statement.
Was there testimony by your client about whether he believed it to be
yes,
true?
Yes, there was.
And what was his testimony?
He said he believed it then, and he believes it now. You know, and so their argument was, well, if we interpret this, as they have, as a statement about the personal feelings of Judge Cannon, and Judge Cannon said, I don't feel that way, therefore you should have known, or you could have asked him, you should have known that wasn't his personal feelings. I would respectfully suggest personal feelings cannot be known by what people say. And I recognize you don't like the analogies to non-judicial candidates, but the reality is, if we take the same standard, you don't have to believe what your political opponent says about their feelings, and any statement about somebody's feelings is necessarily a statement of opinion rather than a statement of fact. So you can't have a knowledge that it was false. And the basis of his statement was his interpretation, my client's interpretation.
So you're saying this was a statement of opinion and not a statement of fact? Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, as we interpret this statement, it is a statement.
What statement are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the statement, Judge Cannon doesn't think teenage drinking is serious.
Okay, now you're saying that's an opinion statement and not a fact statement?
It is a fact statement the way we interpret it. It's an opinion statement the way the board interpreted it. We interpret it as a statement that he didn't believe that teenage drinking was a sufficiently serious crime to justify the intrusion. The board interpreted this to say this is a statement about his personal feelings. If it were a statement about his personal feelings, it would be a statement of opinion.
That you're talking about, it's quoted, I believe it's quoted in the brief, I would want nothing in this decision to deter an officer from exercising his duty if he clearly observes a serious misdemeanor offense or an offense of violence or if he has other good cause to make an intrusion. Is that the sentence you're referring to?
That's the sentence that I'm referring to, where he talks about the seriousness or lack of this is not a serious misdemeanor.
So your client interpreted that sentence to mean that teenage drinking is not a serious offense?
Correct.
Am I right?
Correct. In the context of the State v. Andrews case, which is cited both visually and orally in the added issue.
But that is in the context of the protection of the Constitution from the intrusion of the state into someone's home. That's what that case is about.
Correct, Your Honor.
And so what I hear you saying then is that an officer had exigent circumstances to enter that home, and the ease with which he could have gotten a search warrant doesn't matter.
Well, Your Honor, there was a difference of opinion, if you read the dissent in that case, about how easy it would have been to get a search warrant under circumstances in which evidence had already been destroyed, according to the dissent in the case.
Well, evidence hadn't been destroyed, though, had it?
We believe it had, or at least there had been attempts to. You know, that there were things that were being you know, the visualization of what had happened in terms of things being darkened out and thrown away. I don't know the details, but it's in the record. In fact, was a concern that the dissenting judge articulated in her dissent.
Before your time expires, Mr. Brett, the panel in this case recommended imposition of a six-month suspension stayed in its entirety. And the board indicated its view that the period of a sanction should be for 1 year with the final 6 months stayed on conditions. And what is it that you can tell us as to why we should follow the panel, or what are you recommending?
Well, Your Honor,
as a sanction in connection with this,
you know, if obviously our preference is they find no violation, but if a violation is found, the disciplinary council had recommended initially a public reprimand only. It is unprecedented to give time off. Actual time off to a political candidate under 4.3. It's never happened before.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Unless there's been some other violation also found.
This is a suggestion, you said, of no violation. Based on what?
Well, the no violation would be based upon the fact that there's that both statements are susceptible of true interpretations.
Now, let's focus on the second offensive commercial that your client has put out. It was that basically Tim Cannon won't disclose expenditures, some kind of expenditures. And it was admitted by your client, was it not, that he never asked for them?
It was admitted by my client that he never asked for them. He did state, sitting right next to Judge Cannon, that he thinks that all this information about where all the bills are paid should be on their website forthwith, and that's Exhibit M. But it was not in the form of a question.
Okay. Well, he says, all right, that's fine, but where is it, you know, shown that Judge Cannon blocked that?
We don't use the term blocked, and we
no,
don't
I'm
use the term
asked.
No,
I'm using that term blocked, because you're saying won't disclose when it was never asked for. The commercial indicates that, you know, it gives the impression to the public that he was asked and refused to do this. And specifically, it talks about travel expenses?
It says that he won't disclose his taxpayer-funded travel expenses. That's the statement.
Okay, but the 11th District didn't pay for travel expenses.
Your Honor, we don't say that it's only from the 11th Circuit that he wanted to be disclosed. And that's why I've highlighted the last statement in Exhibit M.
What's the basis for saying he won't disclose it?
Well, he didn't disclose it.
You know, what do you mean?
He could disclose it. He disclosed some portions, but not that one. And later, when asked under his oath, when he finally, at least now, knows that Ron Tamburino wanted him to disclose it on the website, he says, I'm not going to let Ron Tamburino dictate what I do or do not put on
my
website.
So he's got... Is there a statutory duty to disclose
There's
things
no
like
no.
this on a website?
There is no statutory duty. We were criticizing his administrative exercise of authority as the administrative judge. This is a legitimate issue.
It would be fair to say the Supreme Court of Ohio won't disclose the minutes of their conferences because we don't put them on the website. They're available if you ask for them, but I don't think we put them on the website. So it would be fair commentary to say we won't disclose them because we haven't chosen to put it on the website. We have no statutory duty to do that, but that would be fair political commentary.
I'm not familiar with the details of the availability of the minutes, but it could be.
All right, what's disclose? How are we supposed to read disclose? Only on the website is disclosure? Because if somebody asks for those minutes, they're disclosable, and they will be provided. If somebody asked Judge Cannon directly, could I see what the county or the 11th District has paid for your taxpayer-funded travel expenses? He certainly would have responded to that. So they would be disclosed.
Your Honor, I would respectfully, here's how I would put it. One of the members of the panel, Mackenzie Davis, said that disclose can mean all sorts of, lots of different things. And I think he's right. You can disclose to your lawyer, you can disclose to your confessor, you can disclose to your political group.
But
you
these
can
have to be disclosed on forms for ethics reporting. And they are available, and they are available to the public.
They're not openly available in the way they would be on the website. And we were talking, the ad was addressed to the voting public. These things were closed to the voting public. They weren't open to the voting public.
They weren't closed to the voting public.
They weren't advertised
by the 11th District, but they're not prevented from being disclosed. That just doesn't seem to be fair commentary at all.
Well, Your Honor, there's a difference between preventing something from being disclosed and actually disclosing something. And
gives the impression that he prevented it from being disclosed when asked, that he refused. All right, let's move on to another area. Cannon has heard cases less than 35 days each of the last 2 years. Has there been appellate judges who's heard in the 11th District cases more than 35 days?
Your Honor, this is not a finding against us. They found no problem. There was no finding on that issue. That was part of an original complaint, but we were not defending against that because we already defended that in the preliminary stage, and it was thrown out. It's true that Judge Cannon threw all sorts of accusations of falsehood. Most of them, except for these two, were in fact thrown out.
Counsel, I would like to, at least I want to be fair here. You are aware that the board suggested the increased sanction because of your client's repeated refusal to acknowledge the blatantly false content of his advertisements. You do understand that's why the board increased the sanction.
That's one of the reasons.
So your position today remains, they're not false.
Your Honor, I think it is a violation of fundamental due process to punish us for defending against these allegations.
Are you deliberately ignoring my question?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. If I did, I apologize.
Are you saying today they're not false?
Yes, I'm saying today they're not false. Or to put it differently, I'm saying they're capable of true interpretations. And we're not bound to take the interpretation that the board imposed upon them. Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Calgary.
May it please the court. Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court, I'm Joe Caligiuri and I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. This court has held in O'Toole that there is every reason to expect and insist that candidates will be truthful in their campaign speech when they are seeking a judicial position. And when respondent was put to that test, he failed it miserably. The board found, and these were the only two issues in front of the board, that he published and approved campaign statements in two different ads during the 2014 election that were patently false.
Was there evidence that he knew that they were false?
The evidence, there was evidence that the board found that he made them either knowingly or with reckless disregard. The evidence that was presented with regard to the first ad, which was the teenage drinking ad, was number one, the opinion itself. So when you read Judge Cannon's concurring opinion, he states in the second line, right out of the gate, that he recognizes the great concern associated with the problems of contributing to underage drinking. And then in the next paragraph, paragraph 43, he states, I want to emphasize that I do not wish to impede an officer's ability to effectuate the laws against, to make arrests for the laws against teenage drinking. So right just by reading the opinion, you understand there's no way that someone can say Judge Cannon doesn't take the issue of teenage drinking seriously.
But if we look at the rule announced in O'Toole,
yes,
and we think about the difference between a misleading statement,
right,
and a false statement, aren't we dealing here with a misleading statement? That there is a conclusion in his opinion that says this isn't, I'm not going to use the right words, but it isn't serious enough to allow a police officer to barge in without a warrant. I mean, that's true. Yes, Judge Cannon made all the other statements, but isn't it then in the category of misleading as opposed to false?
I would respectfully disagree, because the respondent himself testified that his understanding was that the issue in the case was that whether or not teenage drinking was serious enough to create exigent circumstances. That's not what the ad said. The ad said that Judge Cannon didn't think teenage drinking was serious. By respondent's own admission, when he ran the ad, he recognized it was serious, but it wasn't serious enough to create exigent circumstances. And that's why when he ran the ad, he knew, in my opinion, that it was false, but at the very least, he knew it was reckless. And then the other thing, the other factor I think that we can point to show knowledge, is that immediately after he ran the ad, the OSBA's Government Relations Committee reviewed the ad at the request of Judge Cannon's campaign. And they reviewed it, and they found that it was an unjust criticism on the judge, and it sent a letter, Exhibit 4, to Mr. Tamburino. And it said, we feel that your ad completely mischaracterizes what happened in that case, and that it places Judge Cannon in a false light, and that it impugns the integrity of the court.
But none of that said that it was false.
No, but it did say that it did give him cause of, it should have given him cause for concern that someone's
saying—
Didn't
it say place him in a false light?
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. Someone's claiming that I'm putting a judge in a false light. I'm attributing something to this judge that's untrue. That's about as close as you can get to saying something is false without actually saying it.
My concern is we're dealing with First Amendment rights.
Right.
And we're not just dealing with speech, we're dealing with political speech. So what's our standard? Are we under strict scrutiny?
Yes, I think we are under strict scrutiny, but this court's answered that question. The speech in here, in this case, is false. And if you find that the speech is misleading, the respondent prevails. We don't disagree with that. But he's trying to come in here today and say, well, it was either true, which we can show objectively that it wasn't, or it was a statement of opinion. And you can't just label something an opinion. This court has stated in Vail, and the Supreme Court of the United States has stated, that there has to be an analysis of the totality of the circumstances to determine whether something is fact or opinion. And when you go through that analysis, you look at the specific language used, the general and broader context of the language in which it was used, and whether it's verifiable. And when you run through that test, as I did in our brief, you come to the only conclusion that this was not a statement of opinion. It was a statement of fact, because the specific language used doesn't really give any viewer or listener the notice that this is someone's opinion. It's kind of
when you also look at the use of this, these commercials, they were to be persuasive with the voters, to instill in the voters the fact that Judge Cannon doesn't deserve to be a judge. That's the ultimate goal here.
Absolutely.
Is to discredit Judge Cannon.
Right. It was the intent was to denigrate Judge Cannon in front of the public by lying. And when he did that, if you look at the language that was used, it's very specific. And then if you look at the broader context, we're talking about a position of public trust. I mean, as this court stated in O'Toole, there's compelling state interest at stake here, and one of them is the public's confidence in the integrity of the judiciary. You have a portrayal of a judge serving hard liquor to kids in a courtroom, and then the ad shortly thereafter ends by saying, this judge doesn't think teenage drinking is serious. That's what gives the ad life. And so the public is expecting truthful information from a lawyer that wants to sit on a court of appeal. So when you consider that context, you have to come to the conclusion that this wasn't an opinion, it was factual. And then just the general context, he stated the State versus Andrews ad right in the opinion. And when he did that, he was basically telling the viewer, the listener, that everything that I'm saying is factual. Go look it up in the opinion. And no reasonable person could ever read that opinion and come to the conclusion that Judge Cannon doesn't think teenage drinking is serious. That's a moral indictment against Judge Cannon.
Could you, I'm just thinking all kinds of hypotheticals. Could an ad have a picture of Judge Cannon's dog sleeping, looking sad? And the ads say, Judge Cannon says he's never beat his dog. And then say, really?
Well,
good luck answering that.
Good, thank you.
So, I mean, there's just such a range of how you can paint right up to the line and give a false impression without ever saying anything that's false.
Well, and I think you have to
And as an example of something, there's no falsity there.
I think
a false statement.
Right, and I think the
but
difference...
But it sure gives a bad impression.
It gives a bad impression, it does, but there may not be a false statement of fact in that hypothetical. Yeah. In our situation, it's Relator's position, and the board agreed, that this was a false statement of fact. Whereas in your hypothetical, he's making some sort of judgment. I still think you have to go back and determine, was there even a reasonable basis, in fact, for making that allegation? And then there's the question of, is that material to a judicial campaign, where this was just aimed directly at the integrity of the judiciary.
So the picture was of kids actually drinking in a courtroom.
The judge actually
serving
kids that were drinking in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the ad, I think respondent would agree, was highly offensive. But we're not here because it's offensive. We're here because it's false. And then the second ad was even more troublesome, which basically was Judge Cannon won't disclose his taxpayer-funded travel expenses. And as Chief Justice O'Connor stated, he admitted he never asked him. That's number one. The second reason why it's not subject to an innocent interpretation, as the respondent would like you to believe, is because he did disclose them. He disclosed them to the Ohio Supreme Court in order to get payment to be reimbursed. So there is no innocent construction there. And the respondent wants to come in and say, as he did in his brief, that basically what he was saying was that Judge Cannon will not disclose them. Again, it's our position that he did disclose them anyway, but that's not reasonable. It's not a reasonable interpretation to use the words will not when he himself, when he was confronted by Mr. Malcheski, who was Judge Cannon's campaign manager, he stated, hey, you're saying false things. No one's ever asked us for these types of expenses. The respondent himself replied in writing saying that Judge Cannon continues to refuse to disclose his taxpayer-funded travel expenses. So even he interpreted the word won't to mean refused.
Counsel, in O'Toole, we basically recognize the concerns over political speech, and we have stated that if it's misleading, ambiguous, the rule doesn't cover that.
Right.
But what you're saying here is that even considering these other things that may have been in the ad that what were misleading, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the two verifiable lies, basically.
Correct. Okay. With regard to the first ad, the board found that there were several statements that were patently false. We only charged one, and that was Judge Cannon doesn't think teenage drinking is serious. And the reason why the board went on to show that there were several false statements was to specifically reject the respondent's argument that you have to take it in context. So even if you take it in context, it's almost worse because the whole ad itself is untrue. And with respect to the second ad, we would make the same response, that it was objectively false information. It wasn't
subject to interpretation. Mr. Caligiuri, before your time expires, could you address the sanction for this activity? If I understood Mr. Bray's position, he said it's unprecedented to suspend an attorney. It's never been done, he said. We've never done that. And then I read that the relator's initial sanction request was for a public reprimand.
Right.
And then after the panel heard it, it was a period of 6 months stayed suspension. And then the board has a 1 year suspension with 6 months of that stayed.
Correct.
So apparently it's continued to increase.
Right.
And since your initial position was a public reprimand, I wonder what your views are today.
My views today are that a suspension of 6 months stayed, fully stayed, would effectively protect the public and deter future candidates from engaging in similar false campaign information. I think Mr. Bry is correct. We've never given time off for a judicial candidate that has produced and published false campaign speech. I think the issue here that the board found so troubling was respondents' complete lack of remorse. And while I understand he has a right to defend the allegations, he testified at the hearing that if he was running against Judge Cannon again today, he would run the same ad. And I think that type of presentation at the hearing really turned off the panel. And the board was also concerned about the impact of these lies against the judge's independence in writing and freedom to write a decision as he or she feels fit as the laws apply.
So why are we limited in our sanction here to be guided by activities and ads and words spoken by previous candidates that didn't sink this low? I mean, this is an all-time low as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure it is as far as what the board has seen.
Yes.
So isn't it time? So we're not restrained by less serious cases and say, well, we've never done this before because, you know, fortunately, we haven't sunk this low before.
That's correct.
So for you to say, gee, we're okay with a six-month stayed, I'm disappointed.
Well, Your Honor, basically, I mean, some of the ads that we've seen in the past have been pretty bad, but I would agree with you. These are truly offensive and false ads, and they do take it to a new level. Obviously, this court has the right to impose the sanction they see fit. We feel that, again, that because we haven't done that in the past with attorneys that have done false campaigns, and some of them, I mean, the Harper case comes to mind with former Justice Resnick. I mean, these were pretty low blows as well.
Let's not forget about a Supreme Court justice candidate being accused of friends of rapists. Let's not forget that.
So I would just say that, you know, in our opinion.
Well, we've had discussed here, because it comes out of the same appellate district, the O'Toole case.
Yes.
But that was a badge she wore in a few meetings. So the public's exposure to that violation was de minimis compared to putting in a TV ad.
Right. And that, I know you pointed that out in that case, Your Honor. And I would also state that this is obviously much more serious because not only was Mr. Tamburino denigrating Judge Cannon, but he was also denigrating the judiciary as a whole. And that's why we're saying that a reprimand, while again, I think it may protect the public, a six-month stayed suspension, I think, is more in order because the conduct was much more severe than O'Neill and the respondents, I'm sorry, than O'Toole and the respondents.
You're really sorry on that last one.
Yeah, right.
He didn't hear that.
Your Irish judge is straight face.
Right. So it's much more serious, and we would all agree with that. My concern here is the effect on the judiciary going forward. Those judges who have to find themselves on the ballot again Are they going to now think twice about what they put in an opinion because it can be distorted in a way that can be twisted and used against them if an opponent has the means to put it on television or in on the internet, which is, you know, actually no expense whatsoever? That's the negative effect I see on the judiciary. Judge Cannon won, I think, rather handily.
Yes.
In this case. So, you know, that he didn't have any lasting effect other than the angst that this, you know, caused him during the, but I guess victory is the sweetest revenge, but nonetheless. Going forward, what is this going to do to the judiciary who are writing opinions and the words can be, you know, misconstrued and then put before the public in a fashion that is not even, misconstruing is one thing, but lied and falsehoods. That's what I'm concerned with.
And that's what, quite frankly, the board was concerned with, the theory of judicial independence being under attack by these false ads. And we feel that a six-month state suspension, again, that would be the highest sanction that we've imposed. But if you feel that in order to deter this future conduct, that the respondent needs to sit out for a period of 6 months, again, that's the court's right. But I think people pay attention to these decisions. And a six-month state suspension, again, will protect the public. And hopefully, you know, fortunately, we don't see these types of false campaign ads very often. So hopefully people will get the message that you just can't do this.
At least yet, when we look at the national tenor of campaigning and we see what's happening in the non-judicial roles, the chief, I think, is absolutely correct. What do we do about the judges who have to engage in campaigning? And are they going to follow the national trend? We don't want to see that.
We don't. And I respectfully disagree with Mr. Bry. I think that the winds are changing and that with Williams-Yulee, even though judges come to the bench by the way of the ballot, they're not politicians. And I think that's where it's going, that there is going to be wider and greater latitude to regulate core speech when it comes to the judiciary because the compelling interest is so great in protecting the public's confidence in the integrity of the judiciary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bray, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would point out that Mr. Tamburino was a candidate this November. If he wins and has a suspension, this court will disenfranchise the voters. He will not be able to take the oath in January, and if it's not taken within 20 days, the office is declared vacant. This was one of the grounds, the fact that he was running again, was considered by the board in enhancing his penalty, and I would suggest it's highly appropriate to do it in that way.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.
All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.